Welcome to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone, the podcast where we highlight nonprofit leaders in the trenches who share the strategies and tactics they use to grow their organizations and make a difference each day. Let's dive in.
Hello, and welcome back to the Nonprofit Growth Show. I'm your host, Jason Warren, and I'm here today with Morgan Lopes with New Story, an organization that is pioneering solutions to end global homelessness. Founded in 2014, New Story has worked in four countries to build more than 2,300 homes, changing the lives of over 11,000 people across the globe. Morgan, thanks for being here.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, before we jump in, could you spend just a minute or two to explain how you became involved with the effort to end global homelessness or with nonprofit work more broadly?
Yeah, for sure. So it started for me, I guess it was around 2014. I was at a local meetup or an event that we were working for a community food bank in the area and met one of who would eventually become the co-founder at News Story, Matthew Marshall. We got grouped on the same team, worked together over the weekend, built a pretty good rapport, and then we stayed in touch over the years. And a few years later, after founding News Story, they got accepted to Y Combinator, and Matthew has always done a great job of following up and staying in touch with people. And so I was very much in the loop. And one day he reached out and asked for help crafting a job description for a software engineer. They were kind of at that point. They'd managed to make it very far without having a technologist on the team and had tapped me to help just provide feedback on a job description. A few months later, circled back and he offered me a position. He said, hey, I think you're the right person for this role. Let's talk about what it could look like. And so that began my journey with News Story. Since the beginning, I was always inspired by the opportunity to help build the type of nonprofit that I would want to work at. I think more often than not, nonprofits or doing good can be used as an excuse for poor operational excellence. And I always got the sense that News Story cared quite a bit about not just what was being done, but the way in which that work was being accomplished. And so so far, I would say that with every passing year, I find that is more and more true. There are a few things in life that we experience, and over time, we find they are better than expected. Most things are the opposite, but News Story has definitely been that for me.
Well said. I think it's really interesting how many people get into nonprofit work for all of the difficulties inherent to it because of relationships, you know, because people share their passion, and that pulls them into the broader effort.
Who we know has a strong connection with, I think, where our lives end up. I have a great teacher. One of my earliest teachers in high school had really over and over again impressed upon us the importance of relationships, of our network. And while we like to think that it's just the random application that we send off for the job, more often than not, it tends to be someone that we know or a connection that helps pull us in certain directions.
Can you tell the listeners, what does your organization do in your own words?
Yeah, News Story at our core, we pioneer solutions to end global homelessness. Why the word pioneering really matters is because homelessness being such a big problem, it's a very expensive issue to solve. The path to making meaningful impact in the area requires a level of just doing stuff that has never been done before quite like this. And it requires ingenuity and thinking differently. We would say that if the conventional methods were sufficient, then people would all have safe, stable houses, and they don't. And so rather than coming to the table and saying, we just want to build a slightly better mousetrap, we know that it's going to require a lot of outside-of-the-box thinking and creativity to pioneer new solutions so that we can really move the needle.
It shows that respect to all the people who've done the effort before by illustrating that, yes, good minds have applied their time to solving this problem. We've been working on this for, you know, as long as there's been human history, but there's always room for new innovations. There's always room for creative new thinkers to enter in and to apply technology in a very innovative fashion.
Yeah. And technology is, I think we would think about it like the hardware and software that connects to our computers. But it goes so much further than that on the topic of innovation, right? Systems can be innovative. Processes. There's a lot of different elements to innovation. And yeah, I've heard this analogy once that when you see a turtle on a fence post, you know he didn't get there on his own. And much the same way, we are very much standing on the shoulders of giants who have done a lot of really great work before us. So we are not here saying we figured anything out. And actually, much of what is innovative in our work is just taking learnings and information that is available or that other people have done in a different context and reappropriating it in a different industry.
So what kind of impact do you make in a given year?
Yeah, we're impacting a couple thousand people a year through building homes. We're most notably, people most connect us to 3D home printing, which is one of the innovations that we've worked on. Looking forward, kind of our current rallying cry and the thing we're marching toward is housing 1 million people. So the goal is to continue to ramp our impact and double down on some of the implementations of housing that we have found to be most effective and, yeah, seek to just keep turning the crank and ramping up the number of people that we can serve in a given year.
Do you have any insight to share as to how exactly the idea of 3D printing housing came about?
Our team has, right now they're biannual. They've been shifted quite a bit during COVID, but once upon a time, every 3 months, our team got, or yeah, 3 months, every quarter, our team would get together. And one of the sessions that we would have together was what we called moonshots, right? We were just dreaming big, thinking, hey, what are ways that we might be able to accomplish our mission faster, better? And a theme that has come up over the years is the cost, the speed, and the quality of building really good homes. And it was kind of thrown out haphazard, and I don't even remember by who, but like, hey, what if, you know, we could print a home just like you would print a gadget on a 3D printer? You could do an entire house. We'd of course seen a couple of things at the time that, you know, made us believe that could be possible. Well, months later, through a connection through our network, our CEO got introduced to a group of a construction technology company in Austin, Texas called Icon. And we were at a spot in our journey where we were kind of ahead on fundraising, right? We literally couldn't build homes fast enough. And Icon was early enough in their journey where they had this idea and this belief that they could build something and lack the funding. And so we're like, okay, well, hey, this thing that we have is something that you need and vice versa. So let's explore this together. And yeah, a union of sorts was formed, allowing us to walk down this journey toward 3D printing.
I just think that's absolutely staggering when you think about living in a present where that is a possibility. It seems like something that would be out of Star Trek or the Jetsons in my childhood. And thinking that that's what we're doing nowadays is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, Jason, who is one of the founders of Icon, says the way that he talks about it that I think really connects with me is we are on this side of science fiction, right? It almost feels impossible, but hey, we've done it. And so we've kind of just taken one step back off of science fiction. In a lot of ways, it is still very early, right? The 3D printing technology, the quality is incredible given the short amount of time that this has been in process. Things like cost and speed, though, are being still worked on and refined more and more over time.
Sure, absolutely. So one thing that I've picked up a lot about your organization is how much they value transparency. Would you like to share how making a radically transparent environment has helped your organization to gain ground?
A lot of average donors, people like presumably you or I, have lost a lot of faith in nonprofits, people who say they're doing good, who are having impact. There have been a lot of unmet promises when it comes to those claims. And one thing that News Story has done since the beginning is prove it. When somebody gives money to the organization, we actually connect individuals to the families that they help serve, which is huge, right? You can actually see the family that you support. We've got a lot of technology behind the scenes that helps coordinate that and help us kind of do the bookkeeping on what it means to connect every dollar to every family served. Another element of our work when it comes to transparency is our 100% model. So we have a small group of donors that support our overhead, our operations, our salaries, and then all other money that we get toward our program of building homes goes toward that intervention. So when somebody comes to our site and whether they give $10 or $10 million, toward homes, all of that money goes toward that. So they're not paying for our team's salaries or whatever. And that goes a long way in repairing a lot of the broken trust because we're saying, hey, We keep money separate into bank accounts. We are literally transferring it directly to our on-the-ground partners for these purposes. Our operations and all those things are funded by a totally separate group of people. It's, it provides a level of just clarity and confidence. Many people over time will start giving toward homes and then realize that, wow, there's an opportunity here to build, to not just house a family, but to build an organization that is thinking differently. So, that transition can happen, but those are two really big parts. And our donation system, for instance, people can like sign up and actually use the same tool that we use. We have a surveying platform that we built that other organizations can leverage for their work. It's completely offline, which we had to build a whole new thing for that to work in remote contexts. So everywhere from the money that supports the organization to the technology that equips us. And then, online, our team is always dropping experience shares and examples of all kinds of just the processes that we use to run the organization.
When it's transparent, people feel like they're getting more value out of their donations, which encourages people to donate more. And it creates a ethical transparency as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a positive feedback loop that while many organizations may not have the same kind of concept on transparency, they may not have a negative feedback loop, right? Like it could just be kind of more neutral, like, yeah, I give my money and I feel pretty good about it. But the momentum that can be developed and just the power of increasing trust over time, once we make promises, keep them, and that cycle continues, it's pretty profound.
So we've talked a lot about the progress that you gained and the ways that you've gotten there. But what was a complication or a particularly challenging aspect that arose in the process of applying these new methods?
One phrase that comes up quite a bit is ending homelessness is freaking hard. There is a lot of things like setbacks that occur along the way. The countries that we work often have political instability. Weather is a very like very far outside of our control. But then there's this kind of middle ground of, yeah, government policy, land ownership. A lot of in America, we have a very formalized land ownership policy for centuries and generations. The land has been claimed and it has a name attached to it in a file in some government building. And in other countries, that's pretty informal. And trying to figure that out before we're going to drop a $7,000 to $10,000 home on a piece of land, we want to make sure that the people we're giving it to can stay there once it's built. And so, land formalization, governments. We have had homes that sit empty because of utilities. Right, trying to coordinate with the infrastructure of developing countries to make sure that things like electricity and water are hooked up. Those things pop up quite a bit.
It seems like there's a really staggering disconnect trying to apply the high-tech methods of problem solving that we have here to other countries that don't have that same technological infrastructure ready to go. There's a loss of meaning in translation.
Yeah, we kind of walk in feeling like we have, like we know what it takes to build something or to implement something. And we take a lot of the infrastructure for granted, right? The fact that I could get up right now and within 6 feet, turn on a faucet and get clean, unfiltered water that I can drink without ever considering if it's going to make me sick. That's different in other countries. Or the fact that I know that I can drive home today and I'm going to drive on all well-paved roads. Now, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and so we have an abundance of potholes, but by and large, right, there are there's just some basic infrastructure that we take for granted. And I think in many cultures, we can look at other people who have it worse than we do and project all kinds of reasons as to why we believe that to be true. And in a lot of cases, it's as simple as that other places have not invested the same as we have in our country into basic infrastructure.
So earlier you mentioned that doing good is often an excuse for poor operational excellence. For organizations, especially smaller organizations or those trying to get started, do you have an idea of some ways that they could kind of analyze what they're doing and try to make it more effective, find things that aren't working well, generally increase their efficiency, just mindsets or methodologies?
Yeah, well, first of all, I say that and I've struggled to say it in a way that doesn't feel like I'm just throwing a ton of shade to nonprofit leaders. I will say I have a lot of confidence in the fact that I've never shared that with somebody who works at a nonprofit or an aid organization and they've disagreed, right? I believe that nonprofits in this community is filled with people who agree with that sentiment and desire to be better, right? To raise the bar, to push for an increase in the principles that govern the organization, the quality that of intervention that they provide. And there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of reasons why we don't have the workplaces that we desire to do this kind of work. But yeah, it's not due to a lack of hunger or interest in the people who serve in these organizations. And sometimes it can be as simple as the fact that the work's freaking hard. It's expensive to do this work. It requires a lot of very different complex things, moving in alignment to make it happen. Yeah, so it's not like we're doing something easy and just doing it bad. I believe nonprofits as an organizational structure, right? If you look at it just from the fact that, you know, organizational structure that does not generate profit, that has a different type of governance than for-profits, like it is a more complex organization than typical for-profit ventures. And so you layer all of those things on and it gets bogged down. And the one clarifying, one of the clarifying things that I've noticed that can kind of help become more of a rallying cry is starting to understand what is the cost of our intervention? How much money in equals how much money of impact? And so at News Story, we know that if an average home costs between $7,000 and $10,000 and each home houses 4.5 people, then it costs about $2,500 to get one human in safe housing, right? We've noticed that is actually our biggest barrier, right? So we want to get simple. An expression that's coming up quite a bit these days is focus will set us free. So rather than saying, here are all of the hundreds of reasons why we are not being successful at something, how do we break it down to like, yeah, but what's the main problem? If we could solve one thing, what would that one thing be that would allow all of these other things to fit? And so for us, we've really rallied around the idea of cost for successful outcome, which we say it different ways, and we're still trying to like formalize a lot of it. But if it costs $2,500 to get a human into safe housing, man, the best place to apply operational excellence is driving that cost down. Well, what does that mean, right? What are the mechanisms by which we can drive that cost down? We can decrease construction costs. We can increase the amount of government support, perhaps. We can implement maybe a repayment model, right? There's a lot of different things we have there. So that's one. I think for many organizations, maybe they have that very clear. There are people that have known for a long time that it costs $10 to serve food for a day to a person. And maybe their number looks different, but I would look at, okay, well, where else in the organization might there be disproportionate value? Applying effort, time, energy, resources, money will gain us a significant upside, and then it becomes rinse and repeat, right? If we're consistently evaluating where can we apply our energy and our focus, not what are the many things, right? But what is the one thing we can do? What is the one problem we can resolve? And then work through those over and over again. It can become a little bit more clarifying rather than just looking at a field of complexity and just being overwhelmed and having a analysis paralysis, as they would say.
And I wonder how much it's benefited you being a relatively new organization as well, in that if a larger existing organization might have tried to do something this ambitious, there's a sort of bureaucratic creep that happens with a lot of organizations that have been around for a very long time where they lose their flexibility to adapt, their ability to fully, wholeheartedly adopt something new. Whereas a new organization, especially one staffed by younger folks, are able to really try something more radical and cutting edge and adopt it with the entirety of their being.
Yeah, Jason, I would say I wouldn't attribute too much of it to age. While age can definitely help, I've met plenty of people who are much older who have the same tenacity and the same desire for this. Now, I will say the organizational age, I think, does have a bearing. In technology, there is this term called technical debt, right? As you are writing software and creating technology, you make decisions along the way that you accumulate kind of a baggage, if you will. We've probably all felt this in relationships, right? Whether with loved ones or with family, and you accumulate this baggage, and it's natural. You cannot build something without accumulating technical debt, right? Or this form of baggage. longstanding legacy organizations that might be decades old have a lot of it. And the nature of technical debt is that you can't prevent it completely, but you need to constantly either purge it or be pulling it out, right? So you come back, and in technology, the word that we use is refactor. And so you would go back to something that has a high amount of technical debt, and you would reorganize it. As organizations grow, there's a inherent need to reorganize. I remember as we were at that like 10 to 15 team member size, we're like, wow, the stuff that worked at five people doesn't work the same anymore. And then at 25 to 30, we're feeling this again, that the things that served us well at around 15 just need to be reimagined. That continues on and on and on as the organizations grow. And so legacy organizations just, I think, have a lot more of it than others. And incentives play a big part in this. Oftentimes reorganizing, reshaping something, innovating, it's risky. By definition, it is a thing that we have not done before quite like this. And as organizations grow, they become less risk tolerant because there is a desire to deliver on the promises that we are making, and risk reduces the likelihood that we're going to be successful. And so this tension over and over starts to emerge. And so, yeah, there's a lot of upside to being very young and also carrying that in mind, right? We want to be a lean team. We want to, everything is up for renegotiation, right? As we start to feel things aren't working, we're pretty quick to say, okay, what do we need to break? What is the thing that used to work that isn't serving us anymore that we need to modify? But that requires a level of autonomy. I think a lot of organizations, especially as they've grown, they aren't handing out more autonomy and freedom and flexibility to their team. And I think that is one of the best ways of adjusting and staying nimble as you grow, is pushing ownership, responsibility, and autonomy deeper and deeper into the organization so that people can fix their own problems. Humans are smart. We are collaborative. We are adaptable. And the more we can just get out of people's way and trust them to solve their own problems, I think we will more often than not be delighted with what they figure out. Or at worst, like, it's only a little bit worse than we could come up with for ourselves. And so let it roll and trust that their commitment to the plan they created is going to be better than one that has been forced upon them.
Absolutely. I like that answer because it provides advice for new startup organizations that are trying to get going. There's advice in there for organizations that have been established for a while, the legacy organizations, as you call them. And it even ends on an optimistic note about what humans are capable of. And in the nonprofit world, that's something I think we all have to hold on to. We're trying to make a better world. We're trying to help our communities and the people around us. And it's important to hold on to that ideal of, you know, people can make better communities. We just have to be able to work on it, to apply our efforts and our minds.
Yeah, I think if we lose sight of that belief, we're just kidding ourselves to be in this work. Like if we lose sight of the fact that humans can actually impact change and positively touch people's lives, then we should probably just go get a different job.
So on that note, what is one character trait that you believe folks who work in nonprofit organizations should try to cultivate in order to help take their cause or their work to the next level?
Resilience is one. That's a pretty big one. Optimism is probably another, and I think they go hand in hand. We're doing hard work. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to get stuff wrong. We need to be able to experience those setbacks, those failures, and be willing to just show up the next day and say, okay, like, I'm going to try again. The result that I seek to achieve is worth trying, making mistakes, repeating. And it's especially hard because people like to win. Right? We celebrate the champions and the people who come out on top, the first place, gold medal, all the things. We really like that. We herald that as a society. We desire to see ourselves be victorious. And it can be really hard to do hard work, work that is has a lot of factors that are outside of our control. And so, yeah, optimism combined with the resilience, I think, gives us the willingness to keep trying things. Because the most dangerous thing that can actually happen is because we are tired of it not going our way, we just stop taking risks, stop making bets, stop trying to evolve the way that we think, that the industry thinks. And what winds up happening is we're just less impactful. We serve fewer people. We keep doing something after it's stopped giving us the desired result. And so the consequences are pretty high for us to lose sight of a lot of those things. So I would, optimism and resilience, I think, serve people like us well, because the hits are just going to keep coming. And that is just a tension to manage. We will not be able to solve that, I think, in our lifetime, in our type of work. There's too much brokenness in the world to think that we're going to get a pass on it being really hard, and that being something that's not going to continue being true.
There's a little bit of me that starts to think that maybe optimism and resilience are two sides of the same coin, or the same sort of mentality, just one in the good times and one in the hard times. And when you work in the nonprofit field, there's this element where it's bringing you more and more into contact with some of the issues in the world that other people just don't have to look at. So I think that cultivating resilience, like you said, is absolutely vital, because you're just going to be made to confront more of the world's issues on a more regular daily basis. And you don't want it to just become part of your routine. You have to stay passionate, have to stay engaged. Sometimes that's what we really pull from.
Yeah. I mean, to be completely honest, I would say the world is a darker place today than when I started this work. More of our developed world, right? The first world that we live in is shielding us from a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. We are constantly, we have optimized our way into a pretty sterile existence when it comes to the pain and suffering of others. Whether we do it knowingly or somebody else is doing it on our behalf, we're making 1,000 decisions, and I would say 990 of them are in favor of simplicity, of ease, of comfort, of safety. And what that has left us with is a pretty big disconnect with the suffering of other people. 1.6 billion people and growing do not have access to safe, adequate housing. Now, I miss that. I have two daughters, and raising those two daughters, I lose sight of that. They lose sight of the fact that, or they, if I have anything to say about it, will never experience not having a door to lock, a roof that doesn't leak, a place to sleep that is warm when it's cold out and cold when it's warm out, all of these different things. And 1.6 billion people don't have the most basic form of that. But I don't see those pictures, right? Or if I do, I'm not exactly, double tapping or swiping right to see more of them. I want to protect myself from that. I protect other people from that. The world is definitely a darker place than when I started. And it's not because the world has changed. It's because my perspective has changed, and I've become more attuned to the lived experiences of others. I've seen more of the consequences of things like greed, things like corruption, things like racism, right? They just play out at a much larger scale once we get out of our bubbles that have been very finely curated and honestly are being bought by other people. If I were to be really honest, right? A lot, as Americans, a lot of our time and attention is just purchased by marketing. And so we are seeing an image that somebody else has paid to show us. And once we sit with that, it becomes a little sickening.
I think that's true for a lot of folks. So if somebody wants to learn more, wants to follow the work that you're doing, or wants to give or get involved, where can they do that?
NewStoryCharity.org. We are looking to build an army of committed people who are giving monthly to help put families in safe, stable housing for a lifetime. And so NewStoryCharity.org, you can check us out. This is not just about the million people we are putting in homes. While that will be an incredible feat, we are building a system by which that can happen continually. So understanding what are the tools, the resources, the people, the money needed to make that happen, and we want to put it on repeat so that the first million is just the beginning, not the end. But we are inviting others to come join us. And if for those that work at nonprofit organizations, my hope is that at the very least, this is a great show to watch, right? This is a group that is doing great things that that you would be proud to cheer for. Or if you find yourself desiring to work in an organization that thinks like this, that believes like this, and invests in people, then I would encourage you to check out our careers page, because we are hiring, and I don't see that train ending very soon. So
Well, thanks. And thank you for all the work that you're doing. Thanks to all our listeners who want to learn how to be their best and build a better world. Do you have any last things to say for our listeners as we close out?
If the work that you're doing is hard, if it feels hard, if it feels discouraging, that's because it is. And we can both acknowledge that this is really hard work, but it's work that needs to be done and is work worth doing. So thank you for tuning in. Your time is your most valuable resource. So I appreciate you spending with us.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or giving us a rating or review on your favorite podcast network. We appreciate your support. Until next time.